This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one bump boy, standing 6 foot two, 293 pounds, hailing from Nassau County, Long Island, it's Johnny G. All you gotta do is trust me, Jackson, Maine. Joining me as always in High and Mighty Studios, my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabris. Arthur, give him a shout out. What's that, Arthur? Retire the Star is Born portion of my intro? Fair enough. Retire the entire intro is your idea. That's interesting for a dog. Okay, also joining me in the High and Mighty Studios, I started out in comedy watching this dude, and now we're friends. This is fucking wild. Joining me is actor, comedian, podcaster, Twitch hoster with Paul Scherer. It's Rob Hubel,
the number two fuckboy.
Here he is, the legend himself, the number two fuck. Rob Hubel, let's go.
You got the best intro in the biz, bro.
Dude, it's all I got. These, it's all downhill.
I could tell watching you that you almost cracked yourself up at the in the middle of that one. There was a moment where I could tell you almost lost it for some reason.
Not to go full Mike Mitchell on Doughboys, but it depends on my guest. You know, if it's you, I'm just like, what are you doing? When it's like the status is slightly different in my book because having watched Respecto so much coming up. That you like, you guys are like the upper class. I mean, you guys are like my friend's older brothers that were doing the cool shit.
It's so funny because, you know, obviously everyone has the people ahead of them that they look up to. And then it all at some point just disappears and blends together. And, you know, now that I'm super old, you're not as old as me, but like
mildly old for sure.
As you get older, it's just like, oh yeah, now we're all just in comedy and we're all just doing it. And it's fun, you know?
It is like, I always refer to it like when you're in high school, you're like, he's a senior and I'm a freshman. That's weird. But when you're 28 and 24, you're not talking about high school anymore.
Yeah.
But you still have that energy if you went to high school together that you look up to this, like not look up, but like he's got a little status over me, you know?
It's so funny. Yeah. Cause there's guys that, and women too, that I look up to that I'm like, oh yeah. You know, but that it is totally the high school dynamic for sure.
and then there's a whole nother layer in that, like in my head, I conflate if you were doing comedy already when I was coming up, or if you started after me, you're either older or younger. And that's just not how it works. It's like Zach Woods, I grew up watching. He's like 4 years younger than me.
Yeah.
guys who started after me are older than me, but I'm still like, all right, right son. And right. Greg Tuchulescu is like, I'm 44, man. And I'm like, oh, sorry.
It's totally confusing. Totally confusing.
But now we're all just old.
And we're fucking millionaires, man.
That's the best part.
Dude, we've ridden this comedy train to the very end.
Yeah, I'm getting like a kind of regular Harold residual check that's kind of keeping me afloat throughout the pandemic.
Oh, me too, dude. Me too. I get resids for improv shows.
Yeah. I got this big callback bonus I got.
Isn't it crazy how like nothing really changes that much? Like I still audition for shit and don't get it. And you know, and you're still like, it's just a hustle. Like this,
it's all the same shit no matter what. It's just like the number of zeros changes eventually.
Yeah, but it's just a hustle. It's a never ending marathon of like, nope, you didn't get that. Fuck it. Okay, on to the next thing. You know, and then hopefully you're just doing your own thing and like making your own shit, you know.
And that but keeps you happy in that way. Dude,
you're
touching on something that I've gone through kind of like 11 cycles of throughout
this
quarantine.
Well, you're the king of that, I think. I think you've done like a great job of really of drilling down on this industry. Like definitely you're the fucking number one fuckboy in podcasts.
I mean, please, you don't just make that title up for yourself randomly one time.
Yeah,
no.
That's given out at the National Awards.
I got it from Joe Rogan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Joe Rogan and Ira Glass blessed me with the title of number one fuckboy.
Yeah, but it is like, it is cool and interesting how people can just like figure out their own way to sustain themselves and like, okay, you know, I'm not really going to do this that much. And especially during the pandemic, like that was
right.
Now that we're almost coming out of it, it's like, you start to think like, oh, maybe we'll get to perform again at some point. I don't know when, but
I'm
like,
going through all the same shit. Like, even this pandemic has made me feel retroactively better about my quote unquote acting success, which is something that I've let control my happiness. But in this last year where no one was like, where it wasn't happening for anybody, I had no FOMO. Dude. And then I was just enjoying being a podcaster and a husband and laying around and getting reading done. And all of a sudden I was like, and then this year went by and I survived. I know I'm a fortunate person in that regard, like financially. And I was like, wait, how much success do I really need? Like, do I have enough to cruise for a couple of years right now? Because I'd love to, as you keep saying, the hustle. I'd love to take my foot off the gas for a minute and just like, I'll pull over to this rest stop for a little. And that's just and this last year just activated that in me. And now I'm like, it's such a long game is all I wish someone told 25-year-old Gabrus. Is like,
yeah, I know, me too. I'm so pissed because like no one ever, or maybe I just didn't pick up on it that like there is no finish line, and that does sound dumb and whatever, but like, and I would say in anything that you do, like, you never like are there, you know, but I always thought you did. Like, I always thought you got to a certain point and then you just fucking coast. Like, then you're just like set, but you just always have to keep, and you know, for sure in this business, you just keep grinding. But what you said about FOMO is so fucking familiar to me because I, like a lot of people, just wrestle with that so much. You know, you're just what's he doing? What's he doing? Oh, fuck. Why aren't I doing that? Why didn't I get that? And when the pandemic hit, like, it was just this.
It was an equalizer.
Fucking equalizer where you're just like, yeah, I don't have to compare myself to anybody. Yeah, I can do stuff at home. I can go on Twitch. I can do someone else's podcast. I can do, you know, whatever. And then now a year later, we're starting to come out of it. And I'm just
I was about to say, in like February, some friends were like back at their shows that they already worked on. And I'm like keeping all my friends who had Zoom writer jobs this entire year out of my head because that's not something I can even handle.
Yeah.
The, like, second people were back, like, holy shit, Superstore, we're back filming the last season, something I've never been part of and was not planning on being part of. And I was like, fuck, and I'm not invited to the Hollywood's opening meeting. And
it's
why? I don't have anything going on yet.
I know. And even like dumb, shitty pilots that I do not give a fuck about. It's like, oh, I don't care. I don't want to be on that dumbass show. But really, it would be nice.
Yeah. You know, and that's the entire thing with this industry is just like, I don't think like you said, you keep thinking there's a destination, a finish line. But every like couple of years, if you ask me, what do you think is your goal in this? The answer would always be like, I actually still don't know. So it's hard. Like, I'm not even allowed to be, I shouldn't even be mad at myself for not achieving because I haven't chosen an achievement. So it's like, I'm like doing the both ways where I'm like, I'm hustling nonstop and then also mad at myself for not succeeding somehow. But
it's such a weird, yeah.
I've designed what success is. It's in my mind. So why can't I retroactively choose that I am successful?
Like, but doesn't like social media, like Instagram drives me crazy because I look on there.
So horny.
And I just see, oh, it's so horny, man. You know, I'm driving. I'm like,
throwing my phone.
Yeah. I got to pull over. But
looking at Instagram while driving and getting horny.
Getting so horny.
So dangerous.
Oh, man. I'm wearing the wrong sweatpants. Fuck. I got to go back home. I was, no, but you know, you look
Instagram
on there and you
get. Gives you that fucking extra dash of FOMO.
Yeah. And you just see people that are going and doing stuff that you are jealous of. And I'm like, fuck. Oh, what are they? What they're shooting in Vancouver? What's Steve Agee doing in Vancouver?
Yeah.
What's Tom Lennon doing in Vancouver? Why aren't I in Vancouver? You know,
right. What's happening in Vancouver? There's a lot of people. It's open. I'll go up there. Oh, quarantining for 2 weeks by yourself in a hotel.
Oh, that everyone's sounds amazing, got COVID. Right? Oh, never mind. I'm fine. Yeah.
Also, funny we should say FOMO because that is an acronym where the first word.
Dude, that was an accident.
That was an absolute accident.
We fell into that, but that's what we were going to talk about.
We're going to talk about fear. And this is like the 40-year-old man fear conversation right here of like, is like, am I going to do the thing I set out to do in life? Will I feel fulfilled in some way? But I'm also getting to the age where like I watched that Anthony Hopkins movie, The Father.
That I don't know that one.
It was an Oscar. It's this year. It's Oscar nominated based on a play, but he's like losing his mind as an older man, and it's
terrible.
Edited together to keep you on your toes in like a confusing way too. So like you feel it. And me and my wife were just looking at each other like, oh no. Right. We're going to get old and we're going to get confused. Fuck.
Yeah,
no.
And
now I'm like, new fear. I put it on the fucking list.
Well, that is the scariest thing. I was thinking about that last night. I was like, I was trying to fall asleep last night. I couldn't sleep. And then of course at 3 a.m, I see out the window, flashing red lights and like the rumbling of a big truck. And I'm like, oh fuck. I look out the window and like, our across the street neighbor has like an ambulance and a fire, you know, big fire engine at their house. I still don't know what happened. I don't really know these people. They're kind of weirdos. And, but it was just weird because I was thinking about, like, why the fuck can't I fall asleep? And like, you know, just thinking about like my life and everything. And then like for someone else to be dealing with this tragedy. And I was also like kind of stoned. And I was like, oh no. Oh, I'm so glad that there's not an ambulance coming for me. Like I could not deal with this right now. I'm too stoned. You
know? That's when I know I'm really stoned is when I peak selfish. Like this is a perfect example. Hanging out with Max Silvestri one time, he dropped his laptop. And I felt so much relief that it wasn't my laptop that I couldn't be sympathetic towards. Like he just saw me go, oh, thank God that's not my problem. And it was like, I couldn't resist. And I was like, that's the rudest thing I've ever done.
It's such a weird, I can totally connect with that, man. When you're stoned, it's just like, oh, I hope nothing bad happens right now. Cause I don't want to deal with the stress.
Exactly.
That's why, like, if I'm going to eat something or like stay, it has to be like, you know, my kid's asleep. Yeah. It's like late at night.
Right.
Nothing's going to happen. The dog is walked. I don't have to go outside.
Exactly. Minimal resistance. That reminds me, one of my good buddies, he was like an ex-pot smoker, had a kid, and he lived around the block. And he's like, hey, I want to smoke a bowl tonight. Can you bring me some weed over once the kids go to sleep? I'm going to smoke weed again for the first time in a few years. I'm feeling okay. He took a hit and he texted me in like the middle. He's like, my son just came out of the bedroom and said, Daddy, are you a ghost? And then turned and went back to bed. And he's like, don't think I'll ever smoke weed again.
Oh my God.
One night he did, his son bugged him the fuck out.
That's crazy. Yeah, my daughter's been starting to say stuff like that. She's 4 and she's been starting to say like kind of tripped out stuff. Like, you know, she'll look at a picture of someone in a magazine. She'll be like, is he dead? I'll be like, I don't know. I mean, that's a model from J. Crew. There's really no way for me to know. Well, are we going to die? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, actually we are. We're all going to die. When are we going to die? I mean, I don't know when we're going to, you know, but just
wow.
Like,
that's so intense. Fucking cool to me.
It is cool. It is cool when they start to like look at like the big picture and sort of abstract stuff like that. It's pretty mind blowing that like a human brain can process that at 4 years old. I mean, not that she's like a genius or anything. I mean, she fucking is a genius, but
not
it's
that
just,
she's a genius or anything, but she set up this whole podcast.
But she bought me. She's got this whole garage.
I didn't know what I was
rig.
Doing. She set up my Zoom.
She set up this Ethernet cable and a USB adapter.
She's Geek Squad at 4.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, it is wild to like think about that. But that just shows you what a primitive fear that is too. Of like, oh, this is all going to end. Like we're either going to get old and die, which fucking sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, like both my parents died about 2 years ago just because, you know, they were older and had long lives. But like my mom died and like 3 months later, my dad died and it was just the worst. It's the worst. So seeing that is one way you can
that's
go.
A
the
quick
other
way to remind you. Yeah. Like,
and the other way is also terrible. It's like, oh, he had a heart attack and he was 50 years old or he got into a car accident and he was, you know, whatever. So it's all like obviously overstating the obvious, but dying is really scary to everyone.
But yeah, dying is really scary to everyone, but sometimes it's hard to not have it on your mind, I guess is the thing. Like my wife, Tiff, she's a little morbid, like in that if a neighbor of ours died, like we heard this old guy that we used to like that walked around West Hollywood, he passed away and it like really affected her. And I was like, we barely interacted with him. He's like, but he was so young and this. And then all of a sudden I'm like feeling it too. And I'm like, oh, she like is so empathetic towards it. I think because both of our dads died young.
Yeah.
So like that is hard not to think about the whole time. My dad's was like one of those blue collar guys who always said shit like, dude, I'm not going to be around for that long. You know, die young, leave a handsome corpse, you know, like all that shit. And then he died at 56 or 57. I was like, you asshole, just try. Just say something. I mean, brain cancer comes. Brain cancer is like, can't argue he wasn't trying to fight it. But at the same time, you're like, just don't say shit like that. And I used to, as a kid, be like, blah, blah, like joking because, you know, comedy, being overweight, dark humor, you're like, yeah, I'm not going to make it. And now that I'm 39, I'm like, I take spirulina every day. I'm like, no, like, tell me what I need
medicine.
To do.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. I'm on blood pressure medication. I'm getting my cardiovascular exercise. If I don't get a walk outside, I'm just not taking care of myself. I'm now like instantly an old, and the quarantine helped me in that, like, activated me to fight the fear I have of aging. And my fear of dying is, yes, fear of dying, but fear of, like, losing my faculties before. Like,
That's exactly what I'm worried about, because that happened. My dad just had, like, a slow mental decline, and that to me was just really terrifying, like, so scary. By the way, is this going
to very hard to witness.
Is this podcast going to bum out your listeners? Are people
nobody
gonna
listens to this shit? No, I'm just kidding.
We'll get on to something.
This out.
We'll get on to something more fun, you know, like
we're talking fear. We'll get to more stuff. We'll get to high dives eventually. But for now, we got to talk about dead dads. Everyone who listens to High and Mighty knows my dad is dead because I inject it into every conversation because it's oddly the like subtitle of my comedy.
It's hard not to think about that stuff, though, for sure. And also, I think, I don't know how long ago did your dad die a long time ago?
Like 10 years, 9 years ago.
Okay, yeah. But it's also just like I think about it all the time. I think about it every day. I don't think about them dying. I just think about my parents, like, you know, and you just like, you can't help but think about it. You know, it's such a huge thing. And like, you know, at the beginning, and if I linger on it too much, I get real sad. But like, if I'm just like thinking about them, it's like, oh, cool. Like I'm just remembering.
It's remembering them. It's living with them. Like, it's as if they're like, I don't see my mom every day, but she enters my thoughts. My dad enters my thoughts. It's your way of keeping them around in a way.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I also don't think that, I heard someone say recently, like there is no closure. And I think I agree with that. Like there is no, like put it to bed. There's no, like that doesn't exist.
Yeah,
I think it's
you're like
just
allowed,
like,
you're allowed to grieve forever. As long as you just like, you know, honor your own life. I feel like, you know, like that's the important thing is like the person. Because if you die, like if any one of us died, you would be more sad if you were able to look down and saw that a lot of other people's lives were distraught because you died. You'd be like,
I was thinking about that with DMX. Like I saw that clip of when his body left the hospital in White Plains, New York. There were like, you know, a couple thousand people out there, and they were all cranking that like, I'm slipping, I'm falling, I can't get up, yo, I'm slipping. And everyone was playing that as like a tribute, as like the car took his body away. And I thought like, oh, you know, if he had known how many, and I don't know enough about him to know what his story, I know it was, he was an addict or whatever, but I don't know what he relapsed with, whether it was heroin or coke or something like that. But like, you know, but I just wonder sometimes like, oh, if you knew how much people connect with you, would you take better care of yourself? I mean, myself included, like, you know, I don't.
Well, is that like while we're on scary topics, like you're not a new dad, but it is a relatively new thing. And does that activate the sort of like,
fuck yes.
Instantly of like, what if I'm not around at some point? Like it's so terrifying.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
Now there's someone who's
so
literally
scary.
Literally depends on you. Like a person
that's
really
scary. Like the first thing you do is just buy fucking life insurance and like, you know, just try to be like,
I can't let you live off human giant residuals. You gotta get
It's also weird, like knowing that I have life insurance, like I also, it totally is a motivator for my wife to poison me. Like I know that like, oh, you will be fine. Like if we get into an argument or something, like she could just back over me with the car, you know, and like, she'll be fine. You know, like she's got, I guess what I'm saying is if anything happens to me, everybody listening to this, investigate.
We know, double check everything. Check the Nest Cam. I don't think it was a full blown accident that Hube's head was underneath the minivan tire.
Why would his head be under the back tire?
Now she's actually killing you over.
But the kid thing for sure is a big motivator for stuff. And then when you, you know, when I catch myself doing dumb stuff, drinking too much or smoking too much or whatever, you know, I'm just like, oh, am I, what am I doing? Should I not be doing? I know that I shouldn't be doing this, but I also, it's late at night and I also want to relax and de-stress
yeah.
and like,
and I, yeah. And I also don't want to give this up either.
Yeah. But,
I know exactly. Yeah. And is it crazy because does having a kid make you think about, because you're no longer so self-centered, you can't be, even if you are in a relationship, you, that eliminates some self-centeredness. But once you have a child, I feel like you start to think of like the world without you, like for the first time, because I'm not, once I'm like, I don't have a kid. I don't know if we're not planning on having any, but if I'm gone, I'm gone. You know what I mean? But it's like that thing of like thinking about being gone, like, oh, that's, it's weird.
It is weird. It's really scary. One good thing I think that like, they didn't have before that we have the benefit of, and it sounds really dumb, is just like, digital shit on the internet. You know, like you will, you know, if you get shot by an assassin tomorrow, there's 800 million pod. I mean, how many episodes of this, you know, there's 300 something episodes of the, there's so much material that your friends and all can go back and
listen.
And
I'll be, that'd be such a fucking bummer. Like I'm dead and people are listening to me cut like a Mac Weldon ad from like 2009. I miss some man. And you're like, yikes.
Right.
I need a button that deletes my browser history, all my podcasts and shit, like a life alert for when I know I'm finally going. I'm like, nuke everything.
That's a great idea for a business. Someone should start that sort of thing. Like instead of like LifeLock or, you know, one of these like identity theft, it's just like, no, we'll clean up your reputation right when you die. Like have your wife call us. We'll come in,
take down all your podcasts, any clips of you doing late night improv shows.
Tell us where all your drugs are, everything, all the porn and everything. You know, we'll get it all. We'll clean it all up so no one thinks you're a maniac.
Both of your fake Instagrams and your real one, whatever you need.
He's so funny.
Do you have any fears as a grown man that you understand are irrational, but it's just like something you've decided, like, that's just something that's what we deal with now, like, you know, like, because I will say I do get myself, and I think it's because I'm a stoner and because I like to I have a rabid imagination, I like Final Destination a lot of situations, like if Tiff leaves like a pair of scissors on the counter, like I see that sliding off and like going into my foot and like shattering like all the nerves in my foot, and I never play sports again. Like, and that just like happens to me, and I'm like, we got to put these scissors away. And it's like, we are both adults. Like, scissors could be on the counter too. But that's what's wrong with, I'm so like cognizant. I think once you've lived a long time too, you've seen a lot of dumb accidents happen. So you're just like, it can happen anytime.
Dude, I fell down the stairs the other day. Like, we have like, you know, a flight of stairs in our house. It's like whatever, 8 carpeted stairs. But I've now fallen down twice in my socks because I'll just like miss the top step and just go like floomp and then just fucking 8 or 9 stairs down. Oh. You know, it's carpet. It's not going to kill me. But like the first time I did it, it scared the shit out of me. I was like, what? Because it's so fast and it's so violent, you know?
Every 3 years, that fall is going to get scarier and more dangerous. Yes, that's the crazy, that's the old man shit. That's
totally.
That's what I think about all the time. Is like, I hit my knee on the coffee table so hard yesterday when I was going to grab something that it made me sort of fall over the coffee table. And I can kind of show you in my office, see the coffee table's like next to the couch, but I hit it so hard that I decided to like, fully skateboard bail and dive just onto the couch.
Out. Yeah.
And I was just like, just to not like crush this table. And I landed and I was like, oh, and I was in so much pain. And I hurt my shoulder when I landed, of course, because I'm too big and too old to do that. But then I was like, man, if I was like 15 years older, this could have been like a trip to the hospital, two days in bed.
Like, totally.
On my 33rd birthday, I went to get into my car and I twisted my back the day before my 33rd birthday. And I twisted my back and I couldn't move on my birthday and the day after.
Fuck.
And it was like a year after I moved here. So I was feeling like a more of a grown up. And then that happened. And I'm like, well, now you need to get in shape, not just for aesthetics. You need to get into shape so that like you don't miss out on things. And that's like the old, that's how I know I've gotten old. It's like, I need cardio so that I can hike Machu Picchu someday, or like if you're a dad, you're like, I need to live longer. I like, I want to be able to play ball with, you know, especially if we're New York and LA people, you're having your kids at 38 and 39. You're like, I need to be able to play sports with her, them, take them to there. I got to be able to do all that. And it's like, oh, so in the last year, I've been like, it's no longer about like, how much can I squat or like trying to get big muscles. I'm like, you need to live as long as possible. I'm like, you got to do crossroads. You got to sing Crossroads at karaoke. Bone Thugs and Harmony is your favorite, you know? And
well, so you know what they got to do, man? They need to fucking get, hurry up with the nanobots, you know, that, you know, the people talk about like, oh, well, pretty soon they're going to start injecting
nanotech.
With like nanotech. And that'll just like knock out all of these like bad genes and cancer cells and all that. And, like, everyone keeps saying like, oh, it's like, you know, 10 years away. It's like, well, it might be like 20 years away. But like by then, come on, like I'm going to be way too old. Like, I need you to freeze me now, like stop any aging that's going on. Like, I just want them to get ahead of that now.
That's funny. Instead of training for longevity, you're training to last long enough to get experimental procedures.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I just got to stay alive long enough to get the nanotech in my blood.
Until they get the science down. But what you said about like, as a dad, you worry about irrational stuff. Like, I don't worry that much about me, just because I feel like I'm not a huge guy, but like, I don't worry about like getting jumped or anything like that, or like getting mugged, stuff like that. But I do worry, like, if you look around the house, I worry about like, oh, there's a fucking marble. My kid could put a marble or like a hard can. You know, you worry about like choking, you said, scissors. Like, we have these magnetic kitchen scissors on the refrigerator. My kid always grabs those. So it's more stuff that she could do to hurt herself, you know, like sticking her tongue in a light socket or, you know, anything like that. We have, you know,
and you're like, and you're learning like monthly a thing that you were like, that wasn't even something I was worried about, that I didn't even think a child could or would do. And now my kid did that. So now that's, put it on the list of things that's like, hey, let's go check and make sure that she's not diving out of her crib or what, you know, like whatever the new scary thing is.
Well, that's like, the scariest thing when you have a kid is when it's quiet in the house. You're like, what the fuck? Oh no. Why is it so quiet? You know, it's like alarming. It's like I'm used to chaos and someone screaming and complaining about this. And when it's quiet, I'm like, fuck. Oh, fuck. And you run into her room and she's just like standing there playing with, you know, her Raya doll or whatever.
And you're like, oh, thank God. You're just being a normal kid. That's funny. That's a parenting thing, right? When your kid's young and they're quiet, you're worried. You think the worst. When your kids are older and they're quiet, you're like, what are they fucking up? My mom would just push the door open if we were being really quiet. I'm oldest of three boys. So if we were all together, my mom would just be like, guys, we're being too quiet in here. What's going on? Like, it's just like, we know, she knows we're up to no good.
Yeah. That's so funny, man. I come from three boys too. And shout out to parents of three boys. Can you imagine that shit? I would never have three boys. That would be so hard.
Yeah.
My
youngest brother was my mom's attempt at like, we need a girl.
Totally.
And it's like, whoops. Nope.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. Another boy. All right. Should we name him? I don't give a fuck what we name him.
Where do you fall in the order?
I'm in the middle.
I'm the oldest. I think, by the way, Andy Daly is also one of three boys, one of three brothers too.
Yeah.
And we were talking about that. Are your brothers funny?
They are. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause my brothers are very funny, and Daly's brothers are very funny too.
Yeah.
I'm the only professional, but both of my brothers, if you ask them, would probably say that they're funnier than
of course. Of course. Yeah. But it is, you know, I think that there is a weird, competitiveness with comedy, you know, and definitely like, sometimes it gets out of hand. I feel like in New York, I remember, sometimes with like stand-ups and stuff, you'd hear and see kind of shittiness, but there's something that just sort of like drives you forward when you're around funny people, like trying to keep up, you know. I think comedy, being funny, I think starts out, I think everyone has probably figured this out, as like a defense mechanism. You know, you feel weird or shy or awkward, or it's an easy way to make friends and yeah. something like that, you know.
It's a, how you got a positive reaction from
yes,
an adult.
Yes, yes. Yeah. That, yeah,
that's
exactly.
the fucking, that's the like lizard brain shit I've been unlocking is like, I think I started doing like being funny because it was better than my dad yelling would
totally.
Be like laughing at me.
Yes, dude, and
then,
totally.
Then I'd bring it to school where I'd be like, do people like me? Is the yep. teacher mad at me? Well, if I make them all laugh, then I know they're on my, and then I've just been trying to please strangers and friends for the rest of my life.
Isn't it weird how much of that comes from like stern dads? I had the same thing. I mean, you know, my dad was super cool, but like had, you know, a stern side to him and could like be like, you know,
it's probably a generational thing too. Cause probably yeah. everyone around our age's dads were tough.
You like know what I feel it is, like dude? It's also just having fucking three boys. It's yeah, like, yeah, it's shut like you're the just fuck exhausted. Up. You guys shut up. Like, you know, I'd be going crazy, but because of that, and because I was in the middle, I ended up being kind of like the peacemaker and wanting, my dad to laugh and not to be so serious because I felt like I was walking on eggshells a little bit, you know? So you get good at being funny and then you just carry that into school. And then once you get a laugh in school, that's fucking crack.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh,
if we
do this,
if I could be mega heteronormative as while I'm being honest, the second you get a cute girl to laugh, when you're 13 and above, you're like,
yeah,
okay, I don't think I'm gonna get to kiss any of these chicks right now, but if making them laughing at me, the dork in school, the kid who wears sweatpants in 1998 because your parents won't buy you jeans because they're too expensive, like you gotta make people laugh.
Totally, that is so funny. But
the stern family. My dad was also very funny, but funny in like the asshole bully way that I am.
Yeah.
And then my mom, I think because she was married to him, became very funny in a self-deprecating and able to take relentless jokes. Like my mom is, you know, going on 35 years of being the butt of jokes from four men surrounding her. You know what I mean?
Amazing.
Like,
yeah,
and she,
amazing.
And so I try to take both of their powers into my comedy of like, be a quick-witted asshole like my dad, but then also annihilate myself like my mom. Because also, way more people like my mom than they like my dad. So it's like, that's also something to keep in mind.
I know. It's so funny because my mom was really funny, not like super self-deprecating, but just like very quick and very like was a great like straight man, like could just like, and very charming. And my mom was from the South, so it was like very charming and like warm and, but not like silly or something like that. But my dad was like, funny. He was funny, but not as funny as my mom. Like my mom was just always being funny and also really, loved to, watch comedy also. Like we all grew up watching Saturday Night Live
and
comedy movies and stuff like that. So she loved that. And, what's also weird about my mom connecting these two things is that my mom loved to scare us. My mom used to love to scare us, which is obviously why I like the feeling of being scared. Like I should say,
you're
you're
sort of obsessed with it. It's like, it's been part of your comedy for as long. Something I've always liked about you and you and like Wriggle together, especially your comedy is like the things you guys do are intense and it's guns and it's jet skis. And it's like, but then even as you went on and you know, we're doing more serious stuff, it's always like, you're obsessed with ghosts. You're always trying to get ghost stories and shit. Like there's something going on there where there's something where
is just like when I was a kid, my mom, we'd be watching TV in the summertime in our family room and we had, screens on our windows in the summertime. So you just open up the window to let some air in. And my mom would go out in the backyard and put on this jacket she had with a hood and put the hood up. And she would like come up to the windows and then put her nails on the screen and be like,
oh,
and not say, it was fun. We'd be like, I mean, you know, we're little boys, like in our PJ, be like, you know, but she loved to do stuff like that. Like, so that sort of jump scare, I love to the point now where like, you know, around Halloween, if I go to Universal or some haunted thing,
Hollywood Horror Nights.
Yeah. Hollywood Horror Nights. It's like my favorite thing. My wife loves it too. So what we'll do is we'll go in and this is so stupid. And if it's really crowded, we'll stand there and let everyone go ahead of us. like, so
to try to get like a fresh experience,
to let them reset so that like they'll grab us, you know.
I get super stoned so that I bug out super easily. Like, I make it so hard on myself because I want to feel the fear. So I'll eat like edibles and be like, what am I doing? What am I doing? And just like work myself up and it so I could like enjoy Hollywood Horror Nights even more. Spring has sprung, and that means it's time to purchase some new underwear, or a sweatpants, or a Vesper polo, or Pima Silver dry knit t-shirts. Whatever you want to buy from Mack Weldon, I highly recommend now is the time, because their Ace sweatpants, which I just wore on my first flight in a year and a half, which was horrifying because of the flight, you know, it's just something I haven't done in a long time, but made much more comfortable by the fact that I was rocking my Mack Weldon sweatpants and my Mack Weldon underwear and socks. But the sweatpants were, you know, the most outer layer that kind of made me look normal on the plane. No one got a chance to see my cool air knit yellow underwear that I got from Mack Weldon at MackWeldon.com. I didn't even get a chance to get 20% off my first order, because guys like you can get 20% off your first order by going to MackWeldon.com/hi. Weldon even has a program called Weldon Blue, which is a totally free loyalty program. Level one gets you free shipping for life. And once you reach level two, by spending only $200, Mack Weldon gives you 20% off every order for the next year. Okay? And they want you to be comfortable. So if you like your first pair of underwear, you can just keep them and they'll still refund you. No questions asked. So for 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com/hi and enter promo code HI, H-I-G-H. That's MackWeldon.com/hi, promo code HI. See you there, underwear. Mack Weldon, reinventing men's basics. Hello. Hello, Fresh. How are you? I am talking about HelloFresh. We got bathing suit season around the corner. We're coming out of the quarantine. It's time to start thinking more seriously about your food. And what easier way is than using HelloFresh? It's such a great way to get, you know, it's a recipe. If you listen to podcasts, if you listen to High and Mighty, you know HelloFresh. I'm a fan of. They're sponsor of the podcast for a while now. But if you listen to podcasts in general, I'm sure you've heard them. But let me just remind you that HelloFresh offers 25 plus recipes to choose from each week, from veggie to craft to extra special gourmet options. There's something for everyone to enjoy. The recipes are delicious and frequently easy. You know, some of them are a little hard, but they aim for simplicity and deliciousness, and they hit it every time. They also have a wide variety of easy, delicious options for three meals a day. So if you needed to get like a full-on, I take care of all four meals in my house, three meals and a snack or whatever, you can go nuts with it. Over 4 in 5 HelloFresh customers say HelloFresh helps them lead a healthier lifestyle because the food choices are just that better. And I know this is such a weird, specific thing to me, but again, I cannot stress enough how fun it is that for me, HelloFresh just picks the meals. I mean, I get to, you know, choose a little bit, but then once it's set and I don't have to worry about like, what should I eat tonight? What should I eat? Oh man. And then you can get giddy. You're like, oh shoot, my Gouda burgers are coming later this week. And if you've listened to this podcast, you know, I love those Gouda burgers. So, coming home to HelloFresh means you can just be eating in less than a half hour without faster than it would take to like open an app and order. So it just moves that fast. Okay. Go to HelloFresh.com/high12 and use code high12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping. Okay. If you want 12 free meals, go to HelloFresh.com/high12 and use code high12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. Jump scares. Is that also, because like that's an all boys thing too, because once we were old enough, it was like, hey, Jason, like my youngest brother, like we're downstairs, you know, he comes downstairs, lights are all out. We're not anywhere to be seen. It's like, we're going to scare the shit. We did that to each other. So, cause it is close enough to laughter. You know what I mean?
It's the same. Like, it's so close. That's what's so interesting to me is like horror and comedy are the only two things I think where, as far as like performance or whatever, where it's a physical reaction, you know, a laugh is so close to, it's a release, you know, and it's the same thing. It's just relieving that tension. And it's one so is joyful that, and one is terrified, you know.
But they do feel the same way in that they both feel like tension relief, in that also sometimes when I'm really scared, my reaction is like a laugh. Like it is like
yeah,
a
yeah, 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 yeah. Yes,
like
yes, yes,
shit
yeah.
like that. It's like it's they the are same. Yeah, they're yeah, so yeah. close. And that's why I think like comedy directors make good horrors and good yes. horror people know how to make, because they know it's about
yeah.
And David something
Gordon,
you just
David Gordon Green does the Halloween franchise.
He's so
and
good.
Also
Jordan Peele's
you know, yeah, yeah, Jordan like Peele, all that.
These guys
yeah.
who have that like perspective, like John, and a lot of good horror also has like comedy moments that work because
super
the people
funny,
behind
yeah.
it know what they're doing.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
also just made me think of something when you started this comedy horror conversation. There's something to be said about those two mediums or art forms or genres, whatever you want to call it, have a binary as to whether or not they succeeded.
Right. Whereas drama is just yeah. like two people at a fucking diner just talking about right. whatever. But comedy, like that's the thing. It's like that's why people either love a comedy movie or they hated that movie.
It doesn't
movie.
Speak to them at all.
Same yeah. thing with horror. It's like that was either a great horror movie or it fucking sucked. Also, I would argue that's why a horror comedy movie is almost impossible to do, because right. you're pissing off half of the audience, you know, like half of the audience just
there's
wants
no
to
Venn
laugh.
Diagram. Yeah. Yeah. You're pissing yeah. off both halves somehow.
Yeah. It's like a fool's errand to make a horror comedy. And I love the idea of that, but it's just really hard to do. I think some horror movies are smart. Well, they'll just like now and then have like a small laugh, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the move too, is just like put funny people in a real horror movie and just like, you know, laugh at so-and-so. I mean, also I think, you've been in like three different horror comedies. I've yeah. been like, I've written, you know, like you're like, it's gotta work. And then you do it and you're like, yeah, no, it can't be that scary if you're trying to be goofy and like you step on
it's
each other.
It's hard. It's hard. It's just like you end up like disappointing people in some form or fashion. But yeah, it is fascinating, man, how those things are so closely related and how directors, especially, and writers who write one genre can jump over to another one for sure.
Yeah. There's a lot of the same, like, sort of scaffolding of like, lull them into complacency, surprise them with this, whether it's a bloody hand or a rubber chicken. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is true. What you said is that like people, it has to have, you have to have a physical reaction in both or you failed. Whereas you could watch, you know, an hour of This Is Us, which I'm not picking on that show. I don't know anything about it, but like, you know, and it's like, okay, that couple broke up and then, but they might get back together. It was a good episode, you know?
Right.
Or, you know,
and there's, but it's become subjective. I really liked that episode. I didn't like this episode, but if you watch a comedy and you laugh, you can't say I didn't find it funny.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
And that's like, so there's that instant, someone told me, and I don't want to, I won't name drop this person because they were disparaging an entire industry, but they were like, what were a comedy TV writer for a while, then got on a hour long drama show. And I was like, that must be crazy. And they were like, no, it's easier. Imagine writing, but you don't have to worry about it being funny. It's much easier. And
dude,
it's you have to do drama and comedy to write comedy. You have to write the story. It has to be a good story. The network execs are always about like relationships, grounding, make this real. And at that point you're like, now I also have to be funny. It's like, fuck it. I should just write an hour long drama.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, there's no jokes at all. It's just talking. It's just talking. Do you have any fears, or have you ever been in a situation? I don't know how like physical you are. Like, do you get in fights? Have you ever been in a fight? Have you ever had someone come up to you and like try to start shit with you?
I have not been in a long time. And again, I like to call that big male privilege.
Right.
That's just like, I think. Running us like you said earlier, like you're not worried about getting mugged. I think it helps that we are large men, but also our circles we ran in for so long were comedy. So I was never in like
right,
a dicey
right.
situation. Like,
yeah, yeah,
I was
yeah,
always
yeah.
easily one of the five strongest people at a party. Like I was never because of the crews I ran in. But I was a dirtbag kid and a college, you know, party
maniac.
Animal and
yeah, yeah.
rugby player, and I got in a shit ton of fist fights and I got jumped and I got knocked out and I've knocked other people out. It's been, but not in like I would
a million years.
Yeah, not in like 20 years have I like thought about putting my hands on someone. Or
well, I had
like
a weird thing happen maybe, I think it was like 5 years ago. I was with my wife and we were going to get sushi. And like, I'm not really scared of this, but right after this happened, it was so unsettling that it wasn't fear. It was just such a weird feeling. But I'll tell you what happened. So we're in a restaurant. We're in a Sugarfish in Studio City.
Hell
no
yeah.
Big deal. I can afford it. No big deal, guys. I can afford sushi. So
it's a Nozikawa, whatever the big one. That's the one I always go for. I'm like, I'll take the biggest, most expensive.
The Nozawa? Yeah.
Yeah, the Nozawa, sure, yes.
Yeah. So we're in there and there's like maybe two other tables. There's a table next to us, another couple. And then there's like a four top, two couples sitting across the way. And this is before the pandemic. This is like 5 years ago. So this other, at this other bigger table, this one bro is just like talking about fucking really loud. He's like, oh yeah, dude. So I was fucking this chick and fucking cum. I was fucking cumming all over her face and her tits. And I was fucking, she was like, and you know, the guy's with his girlfriend and then this other couple's there. I don't know what, but it was just like, and I don't give a fuck about any, like I watch porn. I'm all for all of that, but I was just eating sushi. I don't want to hear about this guy.
I was just eating oyster sauce out of a cucumber.
And it was more that, and it was more like my wife was like, these people are just being loud. It wasn't just that they were talking about cum and shitting on each other or whatever.
But if they were screaming like, and that's the beautiful birth story of our twins or whatever, you'd be less likely to tell them to shut up. But if they're screaming shit, yeah, that's like kind of a Yeah.
And he just seemed like a fucking asshole. So, so my wife was kind of giving me a look and like, you know, are you going to say anything to these guys or whatever? And I was like, it was impossibly obnoxious. I can't overemphasize how obnoxious they were being. So I thought, okay, I'll just say something. So I kind of just like got the guy's eye and I was like, hey man, do you mind? And they were all kind of like, oh, okay, bro. Okay. Da-da-da-da-da. And you can just hear them all getting egged on. Like, oh, we've offended someone.
They work themselves up. I know this fucking bully crew move. Cause I've been on both sides of that.
Yeah.
And so you know, they're just going, fuck these guys. Is that the annoying cell phone guy?
Exactly. Oh, is that the guy from I Love You, Man? Fuck that guy, man. Movie sucks, man. Medical police, children's hospital. Fuck you. I'm an ID. I am DB this guy. But, they kept going after I had said something. So then I thought, okay, I'll just politely go over and just say, hey, you know, so I walk over there. I'm like, hey man, for real. Like, do you mind? Like, I'm just eating dinner with my wife. Like, do you mind just being cool? And they're like, oh, okay, bro, fuck you. Walk away, asshole, walk away. And I was just like so mad. I just swallowed it down, went and sat back down with my wife. I'm eating. They kept going. He's talking about licking his balls, fingering his asshole, blah, blah, blah. Like just to try to provoke
purposefully
some
at this point. Yeah. And also just to keep tying in previous topics in this conversation, as one of three boys, I know when someone's purposefully fucking
yes,
with me.
Of
like,
course.
My entire childhood was like, I'm not trying to bother you. But I am right outside your door saying, you know what I mean? Like, it's like the little kid shit. And
you know how to provoke somebody. So it kept going on. And they're talking about me and you know, they're saying like, fuck you, you fucking ass, you know? So I was just like, and the restaurant is not doing anything. Like the Sugarfish people were like outside smoking or something. So long story short, I walk over to the guy a second time and I was like, hey man. And at this point, the guy stands up and gets in my face. And it's like the biggest, like he's like Conan O'Brien tall, like 6'9". And now I'm noticing the t-shirt that he's wearing is like some MMA t-shirt. And I'm like, oh God, I'm going to get killed.
Always.
This guy's going to kill me. And he gets right in my face and he's like, what? What are you going to do? What are you going to do, bro? What are you going to do? And I was thinking like, what do I do? Like, do I take a bottle and smash him in the head? Like, and all I did was just like stare at him and I go, really, man? Really? And like, that was like all I could do. And so it was just like a weird staring thing. So I walk away. At this point, the Sugarfish people came and they like asked them to leave or whatever. And they left and they were furious. They're like, fuck you, dude. You came over to our table, got in our face. So this story doesn't have a huge payoff, edit it out, but it was just
no
the,
editing, but that's was, fuck, but that's the, crazy the, to deal with as an adult
thing.
Man.
Yes. Yeah. It was so stressful. And as soon as they left, I noticed that like I was sweating.
Yeah,
I,
your
like
your jaw body unclenches
yes,
for the first time.
And like
time?
Your vision, I had gone into like tunnel vision mode. And like, you know, your body
you were in
does
fight
have
or flight.
These,
you were in yes, predator v prey. Yeah.
It's such a weird thing. So it, of course since then I've thought about
do you
like,
get the do you get that the dump out sensation right after? That's always after the big anxiety, like fight or flight moment for me.
Yeah, just go take
like,
a
my
huge
stomach drops and I'm like, oh my God, I got shit so bad. What was my body doing for the last 20 minutes? It's like it's clenching everything.
Clenching everything and just surging adrenaline to like keep you alive, you know? But of course, you know, since then I just have come up with replayed it a million times in my head. Like, oh, I should have taken my belt off because I had, right, you know, like, oh, my belt is a weapon, you know? And then of course I went on Amazon and was like looking to order, you know, fucking flap, you know, blackjacks and like, you know, concealable non-lethal right, weapon, you know, but it's such a dumb
in
thing.
In reality, what you got to go all the way back to is just like, do me a favor, send a bottle of sake to that table. And then yes, when the sake goes over there, go, this is my gift to you to shut the fuck up, please.
Totally.
Thank you.
See, even better.
And that's like,
yeah,
you just think of all the alpha moves you could have done. And instead yes, you're like, but that's the scary thing about, like, I mean, this is why women in general are afraid of men, but like so many dudes are just living in a different world than we are, where it's like, I'm not going to get in a fist fight at Sugarfish. And this guy's like, I'm willing to get in a fist fight at Sugarfish. You're like, I'm going out to Sugarfish with my wife. I'm 40 years old. Yeah. I just want to eat this. I'm a little too stoned to eat. I'm like a little too drunk to have sex when we get home, where I can't wait to get home and watch the rest of British Bake Off. And now this guy's going, I'm going to kick someone's ass while I'm at this restaurant.
Like, yeah, I'm going to show my friends that I can beat the shit out of this dude. Yeah, it's such a weird thing.
And it's
that
fucking hammer nail shit. All these dudes, they consider themselves hammers, so everything they see is fucking nails. They learn MMA and they're like, I have to use it. It's like,
yeah, there's no way. No. Yeah, there's no way if you learn, like I remember when I was little hearing that, like, oh, if you study karate or something, you can never use karate. You know, it's only like a life or death. Like, you would right, get beat up before you would use it, you know? But like, there's no way you learn that shit. You're going to want to use it. It's like these cops. Like, if you give a cop, you know, police
toys,
department,
you give them a yeah, fucking row of things on their belt to fuck
yes,
with, they're
and
gonna
body
with
armor
all
and shit. Like, that's why things are going crazy, is because we've militarized all these police. I mean, it's a whole other conversation. But
yeah, it's a whole. That's another thing to be afraid
another
of.
Another scary and, thing. Yes,
and we are in like the we and are you and I are the safest.
People, yes,
yeah, we're
yeah,
white
yes,
we're men white, of age.
Who, yeah, but it's who, fucking scary. It's fucking scary. Yeah. Imagine how fucking terrifying it is to be a black man getting pulled. I mean, you know, we could talk about this forever, but like,
yeah,
so scary. So
it's
scary.
Horrifying. And like, and events like, it was Nikki Glaser one time said something about like, men don't even realize that jogging at night is male privilege.
It
and
is.
It was just, and it's just like that between that and hearing about, you know, the black experience and shit is like, I have been on a, my quote unquote hard life, my poor childhood, blue collar life. I just because I was poor doesn't mean I didn't benefit from being white and like that
well,
or being a
the,
man. And that's yeah, what I learned. And now I'm like, and I only learned this, you know, a few years ago. People are learning this at daily, which is important. But I was just like, fuck, man, all the shit that I thought I was scared of. It's like not even shit that like people are like, we're worried about something.
It's a luxury for you to be afraid of that. It's a privilege that I am afraid of fucking a guy in a sushi restaurant beating me up, you know, and not getting like,
right. Cause a woman is afraid of every man, like potentially afraid of every man because every man is potentially a predator or a problem or an assault.
Yeah. And what, yeah, what I mean, what you said about white privilege, too, like the term white privilege, when you said that, you know, you were like a working class guy or whatever, I think the term white privilege is such a terrible term because it's or a difficult term because people that because it makes you think of like elitist people that don't work at all. You know, they're just
right,
like,
right,
oh, they're privileged, you know, whereas like if you're a blue collar working person, you work really hard, you can still have white privilege, which you do, but the term makes it sound like, you know, the term sounds offensive, like you just didn't. But the term white privilege is just unearned benefits of being white. You know, these
yeah,
privileges
and it
that
doesn't
you don't
even mean
think
that you,
about.
complicitly took advantage of it either. Like, that's the other thing that I think, like, to articulate, like, trying to articulate to, like, the generation above me is, like, privilege? What are you talking about? Blah, blah, blah. I you know, I've been working since I was 16 years old. It's like, okay, in Gabriel's family member, who will not get named.
For sure.
But do you remember when you moved from one town to another town for a very specific reason? Because it was the better school district, the whiter neighborhood. Remember when you moved on up? Like, what is that? Why is that neighborhood better than the other neighborhood? Why? Yeah. Why? And you tell me, why is the school better there? That's fucking weird, right? I mean, yeah. I'm talking about Long Island too, which is very much like whatever the school district version of gerrymandering is, where it's like, just like random cutouts for like,
redlining.
That's what I'm looking for. It's like, that's where the 9 black families in your town live. And it's like, well, they don't go to that elementary school. They go to the other one. It's like, whoa.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, you can argue that not being aware of this, being oblivious to it is also privilege. Like, that is white privilege. You have the option of ignoring this. You have the option of not thinking about this because you are white. It will not affect you. You are in the majority. You don't understand what it is like to be in the minority and have to think about that, you know?
Right. And we're not saying anyone is purposefully, like, we don't, white privilege is not on us, the actor. It is systematic as well. Like, you are participating in it, but you're not.
I'm not saying I'm devoid of it. Like, it's something that I'm just trying to be aware of. Like, I'm trying to think about that more and be cognizant of, like, what I am doing and the things that I think about and the choices I make, and, you know.
Yeah.
But this is a whole.
Oh, what about this? Just to jump back to fear for a little while. What do you have anything, like, do you have any of those classic or classic adjacent phobias? I have light claustrophobia. I get very stressed if something is touching both of my shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I feel squeezed a little bit, it, like, activates anxiety in me. Planes are hard. Concerts are hard. If I'm trying to eat and it's, like, a crowded place and someone's, like, touching me while I have a hard time eating. Like, there's a lot. And my mom is also claustrophobic. And that's why she doesn't fly or, like, you know, and I don't know what that, I don't know if that's genetic or if I heard about it from her or if I'm explaining this weird anxiety I have about a bunch of different things under some claustrophobia umbrella. But that is something that, like, you know, if I don't like to wear restrictive clothing or really clothing all too much, you know what I mean? Like, I like to be like having pants and, like, layers and heavy clothing on, like, stresses me out too.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm
learning that as I get older, which is like, and then I realized, like, some of the scariest shit from my childhood was, like, you remember that movie Cat's Eyes, the Stephen King movie that was, like, three different scenes?
Yeah.
One is Drew Barrymore, where the troll holds her nose shut and, like,
sucks.
Oh, that's
so scary. Yeah, yeah.
That is burned into my head as one of the scariest things I've ever. And I rewatched it, like, a couple years ago as a grown up. And I'm like, this is hilarious that I was scared of this. This is a little toy, like, ding, 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 ding. And I was I didn't sleep for, like, a year and a half because of this movie. But I think getting your face covered, the suffocation, that all is under that claustrophobia thing.
I don't have it to the degree that you do. Like, I'm not afraid of flying or anything. Like, but my brothers are pilots. My dad was a pilot. So, like, they just sort of explained to me how a plane is, like, not generally a plane is, like, not going to fall out of the sky. but I do have, like, suffocation stuff. Like, that is really scary, you know, but I think that's from when I was little. Like, my older brother would, like, put a million pillows over your head or wrestle you down with, like, a blanket, and you'd be like, fuck, get it off, you know?
Yeah. But, and you can't convey, like, there's, you don't learn tapping out was not a thing yet.
Yeah. One time I was in New Orleans for New Year's. This is a million years ago when I was in college, and there were so many people there for New Year's. And right as, like, it turned over, there was, like, you know, such a huge crowd on the street, like, everyone surged, and I was in the middle of this crowd, and it was that thing of just getting squeezed. Like, I'd never been squeezed that much. It was a weird, I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And, like, both parts of the crowd were squeezing me together, and that was terrifying. But I hadn't even thought about that until just now. It's so weird. Like, but that sort of, like, being squeezed, not being able to breathe. Yeah.
There's sort of a loss of agency there, or a loss of control too. That's kind of stressful in a way where you're like, oh, I can't do the thing I want to do right now, which is move this way or move that way.
Yeah.
And, like, or I feel restricted in some way. And that feels
the thing,
like,
the thing that seems so scary to me is when you see, like, and this is, I would just never be in this position, but, like, cave dive. divers, you know, guys that go down and dive through like water filled caves at, where there's no light and they're just squeezing through like tiny little, you know, like those cave rescues where they have to go get the miners out of the cave.
I can't do it.
I just like, guys, I'm so sorry. The soccer team is going to die because I can't go down there and get them. Like they're just, they're going to die, you know?
I got scuba certified in 2019.
Yeah, dude.
Something that I was dealing with, like I've always wanted to do, but I was a little afraid.
Yeah.
And then I went and did it, and it fucking, it, I haven't been in a situation in which I truly needed to overcome my fear to like live in the moment that I was in, like in a long time. And that's a cush life. I'm a comedian. I'm not, I don't get that nervous about going, I don't ever get really nervous about going on stage, and I'm never in a high stakes enough audition that I get activated to some level of nerves. It's always like, this, why are they going to pick me for this?
Yeah.
And so I've never had that, but for this scuba diving thing, we had to go down to the bottom of the, where day two, we're in the ocean. We're off fucking Catalina, 30 feet down at the bottom of the ocean.
And the Pacific is scary, man. The Pacific is so much scarier than the Atlantic. The Pacific is like, you can't see. It's pretty so, dark. It's murky. So it's cold. It's so cold.
It's so weird. And you've got so much stuff on with the weight belt, the wetsuit and stuff. And I feel so overwhelmed.
Oh, God.
And the guy comes over and I got to do my test where I like take my mask off, put it back on and clear it. Take my tank clear off, it. Put it back. Yeah. Buddy, breathe. I got to do all this shit. And he comes over to me and I like, as an adult man for the first time, just said like, and I give him a hand gesture for like, give me like a couple of minutes. I'm fucking melting down.
Yes.
And I was just at the bottom because the big fear for me is you can't
shoot up. You can't shoot up when you're scuba diving. Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Rob. It's like the fact that I can't just shit hit the fan, get out of here. It's like, no, you got to go slow. It's like, I can't handle that. And so I felt trapped. And then also the mask was giving me tunnel vision, which was making me feel more claustro, and then all the weight, and then you don't hear anything but your own breathing, and you feel physical pressure of being 30 feet deep that you're like, it activated claustrophobia in me that I could not handle. Dude.
Yes. But yes. Full on panic.
I for the first time in my adult life, I had to be like, well, there's nothing you can do. You know what I mean? Like you're at the bottom of the ocean, man. Like you just, so I just start like breathing super long and slow, just casual breaths. The guy comes back to me and I'm like, I can do it. And then a couple of minutes later, we're just swimming around doing like the tour where the instructor's like following, you know, you're swimming around like a little jetty, looking at little reefs and stuff like that. And you're like instantly floating in the middle of the ocean. And it does not, and then it's the exact opposite of claustrophobia, which I can't explain.
It's outer space. You're in outer space. Yeah.
2 minutes later, I was going to say, I went from feeling like I was in the vice of death to I was soaring through an alien world.
Dude,
and
it was so just crazy.
Like,
yeah.
So close together, those two sensations. That's wild to me.
I know. I got to say, this sounds like the whitest fucking privilege conversation. Two white guys talking about scuba diving. Yeah. But like,
well, what are we afraid of? Not cops, sharks. It's hard for us out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Squid. But I remember in high school, I went scuba diving a couple times with my dad, and like, you know, you have that vest on that you can inflate with air a little bit, you know, so you can become neutrally buoyant and you don't have to go up or down. You can literally like hang upside down in the water and just like float. And it's just fucking outer space. That's all. It's so amazing.
And it looks like outer space. You're all of a sudden, you're like, this is kind of weird that these fish are this color, right? Like,
yes,
all of a sudden all this stuff starts happening where you're like, this is a weird place down here.
Yeah.
And then you hear from someone, it's like, the ocean is as undiscovered as outer space is. It's like that level of unexplored. And you're
we've barely even like seen any
right,
of it.
Right,
I was, when I was in college, my freshman year in college, I joined like the skydiving group or the skydiving club just to do that sort of thing of like, well, what's like the scariest thing I can do to try to like force myself. And I don't know why, what motivated me. My dad had gone skydiving when he was young, and I thought, well, I'll just do that. And so I went and did like, I only did it for a few months, and I didn't tell my mom or my dad because I knew they would make me quit. I finally told my dad, and my dad was like, no.
Yeah, pilots are like, no skydiving. Stay in the fucking plane.
Yeah, well, my dad, I guess when he was in, like, a million years ago when he was in the Air Force, he, like, jumped out of a plane and was skydiving. And then, this is back before when they just had, like, the huge parachutes that you couldn't steer. And he ended up, like, stuck in a tree, like, upside down, got all hung up. And so he was like, you can really get hurt.
Right.
So he made me stop. But
I skydived once in college as well. I had to lie to Tiffany about it. She was like, I don't want you skydiving. I'm like, I would never. And then I went and did it. And this was like 1 year into our now 20 year relationship. But I was like, I just had to fucking do it. This is how long ago it was, though. I got a VHS tape with U2's Beautiful Day playing in the background to me skydiving.
So funny.
Just to pinpoint that in exactly 03.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah. But what a fucking terrifying, like same sort of thing. I think when you're doing it, it's exhilarating, but the plane ride up before you do
that. The worst
that
I've ever
is
felt.
So your body is like shitty. Every pore is oozing something, It's so fucking scary. Like knowing that I can't get down without going out that door.
And you've got a dude strapped to you already whatever.
And when I did it, it was a tandem jump. Like it was
a static
club
line?
Yeah. I did five static lines. And then after five static lines, I did two solo jumps. So I have like seven jump, but
Jesus. That's awesome.
In this club that I was in, you would go up in like a little plane, like a little Cessna. And you'd be packed in there with like three other people. They'd open up the door and you'd step out and you'd hang on the support beam of the wing. It's called like the something strut. And you would hang on to that like a fucking monkey bar. And then you just let go. But just knowing that moment is coming is like,
it's scarier than jumping.
Yeah. Even now when I hear, this is whatever, when I was in college 30 years ago, even now when I hear a plane going really slow and like way up, I can look up there and be like, oh, that might be skydivers. They're going so slow. I can kind of get nervous. Like I kind of get the butterflies on behalf of those people. It's so crazy. Well, you said something before about not getting nervous going on stage. Did you never get, cause I got nervous for, I would say, years at UCB, like before a show, before I went out there, just those butterflies. And I finally had to like kind of recalibrate my brain to think, when I feel butterflies, that's something good. Like I just tried to trick my brain into is going to be fun.
Exactly. I have, since early on, I've always felt comfortable unless I had to do something. Like if it's like line memorization or a presentation or something, that's when scary. I can get anxiety. But when it was improv or like, go stand up in front of the class, Gabrus, like that shit always, because, and I can lean on narcissism and egomania for that. That gives me like an armor because I'm also my own toughest critic. And I, again, tying it all back to being all boys house, I was relentlessly abused about every single choice I made in my entire life. So it's like, I could just handle people just.
You assholes can't hurt me.
Exactly why I'm comfortable bombing auditions and shit. You know what I mean? Where it's like, people are like, I'm embarrassed. I'm like, fuck that casting director. they can't even do it as bad as I did. I mean, I don't deserve the job, but I also, I'm not going to be embarrassed by this fucking lady with the VHS camera or whatever.
Do you, is there, is there any sort of animal that you would hate to be eaten by? Like I used to think about getting eaten by an alligator would be the fucking scariest thing because they drown you and then they roll you around and then they under a log.
The washing machine of death. They like bite you and then spin with you because they can just keep breathing and like you're just dude. I'm a big time beach guy. I spend a lot of time in the ocean.
You don't have to tell me, bro. I mean, I've seen you out at the beach, man. You run that fucking beach.
I run the fucking beach. My wife is terrified of sharks. I am not, but I spend an inordinate amount of time in the ocean surfing and all that shit. And it's just like, I've never like, so whenever Tiffany brings it up, she's like, aren't you afraid of sharks? Or someone's like, and I go, I'm in their world. I understand that. I'm hoping I never have to interact with them, but I know I'm playing at their house. Like, I'm their guest. And that attitude, for some reason, like, has protected me from the, I'm not afraid of sharks, because I'm like, this is a deal between the two of us.
Yeah.
Like, they know I'm going to come in. And I am hairless, giant, with a big belly and tan. I am seal-like. Like,
yes.
I am. I'm
you
fucking
are,
shark
you
bait.
You are a total shark bait.
And I have a
I've
full-time
always said that about
man.
You.
I have a full-time menstrual cycle going for some reason. So
I'm always bleeding. I'm always bleeding in the water.
Super high risk. For shark attacks.
I coat myself in seal fat. I wax my board.
I can't afford a wetsuit, so in order to keep myself
I think that's really scary, though, man. Like, the ocean is fucking really scary, I think. It sounds like you're in the ocean more than me, but like that, man, and the Pacific is just like so scary. I think I'm not really scared of sharks that much, but I feel like every time I turn on the news, there's like 20 sharks in Malibu or Santa Monica. And like, I don't know whether we've just overfished the oceans or there are no more fish.
Yeah,
so they're all coming
in. And water temperatures too, because they, you know, they hunt in like warmer waters and they're here now.
Right.
They're everywhere. Yeah.
God.
Yeah. It's fucking what we're doing to ourselves is like insane.
it's just a matter of time.
And it's kind of funny too. To talk about fear in 2021, where sort of, and at least for some people, I'm saying maybe some of the more empathetic people and peers of mine that I can speak to more clearly, there seems to be like our own fears are no longer our issues. It's like there are bigger, like societal wide and
that's the real thing
the worldwide
that we haven't talked about. Yeah,
right.
The,
exactly.
The real thing to be afraid of. I mean, it's just like the whole terrorism thing. Like, for years after 9/11, we were sort of taught to believe like, oh, we need to be afraid of these people from other countries attacking us. Like, no way, dude. It's like these nut jobs in these like backwoods militias that have been stockpiling guns.
Yeah.
And then
we should be afraid. And the terrorists, we may still get more attacks from them. This may happen too. But why were we so actively afraid of that? Why was that such a big part of our life? But there's not, there's just so much shit to be afraid of global scale, whether it's guns, the world setting on fire, natural disasters, Texas freezing over, wildfires in California.
Scary white people, cops. Yeah. Yep,
scary white people, cops. Yeah. The state, whatever,
climate,
like
climate
federal
change. Yeah.
Yeah. There's just so much shit going on at once that like, it's like, fuck my claustrophobia. Like, that's not something I have time to deal with.
Yeah.
In a sort of like positive, like, you know, hokey, hands across America way of like, hey, Rob, no time to worry about eating at Sugarfish. Gabrus, no time to worry about shark attacks. We have other things to worry about. And it's like, and it's almost like we're saying this person's fear or this fear that affects more of us is definitely more important than my own personal fear here. So let's approach that, or let's see what we can do about that.
But what's so insane about the situation that we're in is that and I think, you know, I don't know what your listeners are, what the demographics of this podcast are, but you and I politically,
about,
I think,
75% immobile, have never made eye contact with anyone is my guess. Heavy jazzy scooter clientele.
It's all it is. Yeah. It's all it is. People that cannot get out of bed. They cannot get, they choose not to get out of bed.
They won't. If they could, they wouldn't.
Yeah.
But now they can't.
You know,
what are you saying? I'm sorry.
But just that what we're talking about, the way that we are, what am I trying to say? The way that you and I are saying that we're afraid of these scary, big, huge global issues and our society sort of spinning out of control and being so divided and one side is armed to the teeth. Their side, you could argue, is also consumed by this fear that is not, I would say, a real fear. You know what I mean? Like, they're being fed fear on Fox News all the time. Be afraid of demographics, be afraid that the demographics are shifting and white people are not going to be in the majority anymore.
Yeah. Be afraid of unions because the unions will make you pay dues. Be afraid of solar power because the windmills will kill a bird.
Take your jobs.
Be afraid of this because, and it's all, and then this is the shit that disheartens me the most, is just like, because it's all for 8 people to make one more dollar per transaction.
All it is. It's for the Koch brothers to get. Yeah.
It goes all the way up to the top on both sides, where it's like every decision is being made for like the same 28 people. And it's like, and we've learned in the last few years. And I mean, way more people have been way more informed than me for longer, but I've been awakened to the fact that if at the top level, a decision had to be made that would affect you and I's lives directly in a negative way, but make 1 penny per share at the top, or 1/10 of a penny, they'll gladly. If we could slit Hubel and Gabrus's throats, I think we could increase profits 0.01%. They're like, get my knife, get me Hubel and Gabrus. They would
totally.
That's what disheartens me the most. It's like, we're fighting solar power so that I can have $29 million instead of $21 million.
Yes.
And it's like, who the fuck even is that person I'm referring to? Who knows? A PAC, a fucking, a super PAC, a politician or whatever. But that's what's the most disheartening, is that these decisions are being made at the top, and it's because everyone's afraid to be poor, because being poor in this country is a death sentence.
Right.
And it's like, well, what if being poor wasn't so dangerous?
Yeah.
Then maybe someone wouldn't fight tooth and nail to make sure they leave $200 million to their 2 kids rather than $165 million after being taxed on their estate or something like that. But God forbid one of my kids ends up homeless because of the way I've been talking about and treating the unhoused for the last 20 years or whatever. That changed the whole. And again, that's just fear at the top, fear of losing the power, fear of the paradigm shifting, fear of losing money, fear. All that shit makes close the wagons, circle the wagons, close the doors, like everything. And that's not going to be beneficial for our future.
No,
we got to be opening doors. Everyone's got to extend this stupid fucking hippie thing I've been thinking lately is if everyone extends their empathy to just like another 6 feet outside of their property lines in every direction, like. Or another 10% or whatever. So, because there's so many people who are like, I'm not a bad guy. I sent my kids to college. I did this. I did this. I did this. It's like, you're supposed to be good to your family, guys. I'm sorry. Rules. You don't get credit. It's not like, yo, I did all my homework. It's like, yeah, you're supposed to. Like, that's the job now. That's what you're doing. So, like, if we all just push our empathy out like 10% more, you just give a shit about one extra person, one extra thing in life that doesn't directly affect you, I think. If we all do that, that'll double up, triple up, quadruple up a lot of coverage for people.
Yeah.
And that's just a small adjustment. And there are people out there who are, their empathy circles are 1,000% wider than everyone else's, making up for the people who are only taking care of themselves. And even for people like me who are doing the bare minimum. But there are people out there who are really pushing it. And we're not even asking that from everyone. We're just asking for everyone to just go 10% further, 6 feet further, a little bit into your neighbor's yard, and and think about them, or let someone who's not directly in your family affect a decision you make for the first time ever.
Dude, we got fucking deep.
Fuck,
fucking deep.
We got high and mighty.
So high, so mighty.
Hubel, thank you for coming on High and Mighty, dude. Exciting conversation.
To you, man. Yeah. I'm a big fan, and I love the show.
Likewise.
And it's impossible to, I always feel frustrated with my own ability to talk about these subjects in a new or different way. I'm just regurgitating other shit that I just read about, on the internet,
heard on a smarter podcast.
Totally. Totally. And I'm just quoting it, but I agree with what we've said for the most part. Yeah.
And this is the kind of, conversations we got, I think, like we should be having. So people who overhear us, like, you know, the mouth breathing freaks that listen to High and Mighty, if one person is like, oh yeah, I guess that, like, that mission accomplished. Although more than likely he's like, white privilege, I knew he was gonna go full libtard Hollywood.
He's still talking about it. Dude, I'm on like a text chain with these guys I went to college with. I went to school in South Carolina, and so, you know, just guys I've known for a million years, but they're all like super conservative guys. And I don't see them, like a couple of them came to my wedding, but anyway, I'm on this text chain that they'll send out like these, what they think are hilarious Biden memes, where I'm like, oh God, get me off this. Like, come on. Like, I know he's old as fuck. Yes. I know he stutters because he has a speech impediment. Like, right. I know, but who cares? He's better than a fucking Nazi. He's better.
It's crazy you're saying this because I didn't even go to school in the South, but I did go to school with a bunch of like wealthy Northeastern kids.
Right.
And they all have houses and banking jobs now.
Yes.
And I am no longer on a college roommate text thread. I escorted myself out because how many times do I need to see a deep fake of AOC sucking off Trump? And also, what is even the, what are you trying to convey behind the scene? Like, what is your attitude behind this meme? It's revenge porn, but what, like, it's illegal. But why are you saying, like, what is this message you're trying to get across?
Yeah.
And like, the second I had like a 39-year-old millionaire living in a gated community in Connecticut wondering about Hunter Biden's laptops and people coming to take his guns, I was like, I'm done talking to you. We are not living in the same world anymore. Go spend time with your kids.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you have anything you want to plug where people can check you out anywhere doing anything?
The only thing I would plug, me and Shear do a really fun show on Twitch on Thursdays, and Shear set up his Twitch channel and I just kind of jump on there with him. It's called twitch.tv/friendzone, twitch.tv/friendzone. And that's me and Paul Shear on Thursdays, at 5 o'clock, Pacific. But yeah, it's just fun. It's totally, you've been on there.
I've done it. It was a blast. And it's just Shear have been doing presentational comedy for as long as I've known you guys, dude, and you've been very good at it forever.
Literally,
since crash tests. Like, it's literally, I've watched you two do presentational improv together for 2 decades now.
And we take turns where he's the idiot 1 week and I'm the idiot the next week. You know, it's just like,
classic,
we can't both be idiots. Someone's got to be the straight man. You know, but
I don't want to be the voice of reason this week. It's like, all right, fine, I'll do it.
But yeah, so that's the only thing I would plug. Nice. Dude, thank you so much for having me, man. So fun.
Please,
to see you.
Jubal, thanks. It was so good to see you too, man. This has been a real boon for me, being able to talk to my friends for 1 hour. Even though it's quote unquote for work or whatever, but still, this feels fucking great. So I appreciate it, man.
I love it. All right, buddy.
Thank you very much. Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum podcast.
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy, I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold. Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone. People are loving this movie.
It's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now, somewhere, somehow,
body blow, body blow, body.
Someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to like see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane.
It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Well, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators.
We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room here.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action, boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it. Do it.
Come on.
Do it now.